for my money, one of the funnest things about watching the Broncos this year was that every once in a while they would send Bradley Van Pelt in, and that kid is fun to watch. He's got fire in his belly, doesn't he? And he's just so unpredictable, and he's got such zeal and zest for the game that I think they ought to go with Bradley Van Pelt as the quarterback just for the entertainment value alone. It would just be a lot of fun. I remember towards the end of the season that they played Bradley, and he knew he was going to go in. And I remember him saying to a reporter before the game started that he was looking forward to getting his uniform dirty. And I understood that, because it's embarrassing for a football player to go in after at the end of the game and stand by his locker next to all these sweaty, hulking guys who are all grimy and beat up. And you look down and your uniform is just as clean and as fresh as it was before the game started. That's embarrassing for a football player, because you want to know you've been in the game, that you've contributed to the effort. And the fact is that one of the ways that the football players really know they've been in the game is because they got grass stains and mud and maybe a bit of blood all over their uniform, and it's all ripped up and they got to throw it away before the next game. Oh yeah, there's statistics. They can know that, you know, see on the page that they've caught a certain number of passes, or they've run for a certain number of yards, or had a certain number of blocks and tackles and this kind of thing. But if you really want to know that you've been in a game, you look down at your uniform and you see that it's all messed up, it's all muddy and bloody. Now, we've been going through what I consider to be the very essence, the heart of the Gospel of John, the most important part. And for that reason, we've been going slowly through it. I think the last 3 weeks we've been on page 764 in the Pew Bible. But I'm doing this deliberately, because this is what Jesus taught his apostles before he got arrested. You know, he knew the soldiers were coming. He just had a few moments left to share with them, and the things that he said were of the utmost importance. And I want us to see that what he said to the apostles was, here's what I want you to do, and here's how I want you to get it done. Here's the direction I want you to go. Here's how to get moving. And the direction he wanted us to go, what he wanted us to do, his followers, was to follow a signpost that said, love one another as I have loved you. Which, as we have said several times, it puts us out into a realm of life that cannot be lived that way by our human effort. A couple of nights ago, we were down at a music club in Boulder, and I went over to talk to the sound man. And, you know, he introduced himself. His name was Steve, and I looked at the board, and we talked a little bit of sound, and he said, do you ever do this before? And I said, yeah, I used to have a sound company. And he said, oh, that sounds really nice. Are you still in it? And I said, no. I found myself doing sound for a Christian group, and years ago I got converted and left some rubber marks on the road and turned around, and now I'm a pastor. And he said, well, I'm not a Christian, but I live my life with unconditional love no matter what. And I thought to myself, either this guy's crazy, or he's in for a rude awakening, or he's Jesus. One or the other. And if he's Jesus, look busy. Jesus has a new cowboy hat if he's Jesus. But no, it's impossible to love one another as Jesus loved us. And that puts us out into the realm of, I can't do it by myself. And that's what Jesus wants us to know. And he says, now here's how you do it, the same way I've done it. As I make my home in the Father, he said, and the Father makes his home in me, and his life produces the work in me. That's the way I want my followers to live. You make your home in me, and I will make my home in you, and you will have my life flowing through you, bearing fruit, so to speak, and showing me to the world as I flow through you. It's all about the fruit, we have said. We've noticed that, kind of underlined that that's the reason that we're here. And the fruit is showing Jesus to the world. But it leaves some of us with a kind of an uneasy feeling of, well, you know, how do I know I'm bearing fruit? And the fruit is Jesus' life flowing in us, so we can't really look to see, Because the minute it's kind of like looking in the mirror to see if you've got a natural expression on your face. It doesn't work, does it? You've all tried it. And you know, as soon as you look in the mirror, it's over. And as soon as you look down, it's you looking. You know, so how do we see the fruit? You've got to look for secondary evidence. Now, sometimes the secondary evidence is somebody seeing something in your life that causes them to realize the truth about who Jesus Christ is, and they come and they ask questions, or they come to faith and they get reconciled with God through faith in Jesus, and His life comes into them, and they go bopping off as a new follower of Jesus, and it's a real cause for celebration. That's sometimes what the fruit is, because you know you've scored. You know you've been in the game. But Jesus wants His followers to know that much of the time, if not most of the time, a very different kind of impact will show you that you've been in the game. An impact that's more like having mud and blood on your jersey. They're going to hate you. That's just simply the fact of what it is all about. Let's read it. We start in verse 18. He says, "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belonged to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. And that is why the world hates you." Jesus says, you're going to get hated, just like I've been hated. And the people that heard Him say that knew how much He had been hated. He had demonstrated that over and over again, this capacity to be hated in this world. But He said, now you're going to be hated just like that. And the reason for it is because you do not fit in any longer. You do not belong. You are an alien in this world. Now, you don't have to live on this planet for very long to understand that people who do not fit in get hated. They get ostracized. They get rejected and pushed away. Sometimes the hatred or the ostracism comes because they don't look the same. Sometimes the ostracism comes, or the hatred comes, the rejection, because they don't sound the same. You've got a different language or a different accent. But the hatred and the ostracism that comes against the followers of Jesus Christ is not because of a not fitting in that's a superficial difference, but an essential difference. We have a whole different operating system, a new kind of life that the world, those who have not experienced this kind of life, doesn't know anything about. We are as different in this world as a radio is in a group full of tape players. We are as different as a BlackBerry in a room full of pocket calculators. We have different way of living. Now, I'm not talking about a different way of behaving. Our life is different. It's His life in us. It's an entirely different way. It's the way we were designed to live, incidentally. But it looks different in the world, and it threatens the world. And they see Jesus in us, and they reject us. And that's just but simply the way it is. But you can know you've been in the game. You can know that you've been bearing the fruit of Jesus Christ if you get people pushing back and saying, I don't want to be around you. I don't want to hear what you have to say. I don't really think that you should say those things in public. It's just simply the way it is. But lest it sound too pessimistic, Jesus continues by saying, look, there's two different reactions here. If you look in verse 20, He said, I'm going to change a couple of the words as we go through this to kind of reflect the original language a little bit more clearly than what I think this translation in the NIV does. Remember the word, the logos, I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they'll persecute you also. And if they keep my logos, they will keep yours too. Jesus comes into this world to divide it. He doesn't come into this world to unify the world. He brings a sword into the world to cut the world into two pieces. There's no middle ground with Jesus. You're either on one side of Jesus or you're on the other side of Jesus. And this conforms to the two different kind of people language in all of Scripture. When Jesus comes, he comes to make a division between those who believe and receive and those who reject and do not receive. Jesus comes to separate the sheep from the goats, the wheat from the weeds, those who are invited to the banquet and those who are sent into outer darkness. Jesus comes to separate between those who do the will of the Father and know the Father and those who only talk a good line and do not know the Father. And there's never any middle ground because Jesus is the knife, so to speak, that comes and makes the division in the world. Now, and for that reason, he's very, very valuable. A farmer cannot sell his wheat until it's been separated from the chaff. And so a farmer has a device to make that separation happen. And it's a very valuable device, and he keeps it well-oiled and maintained because when he needs to use it, it needs to work well, or else he throws his crop away or feeds it to cattle or something. You cannot make butter from milk. You got to separate out the cream first. So in the dairy business, the cream separator is a very valuable piece of equipment. Gold is worthless if it's contaminated with all the other things that are in the soil. And so whatever it is that you use to separate gold out from all the contaminants, whether it's a simple pan that you put in the stream and shake, or whether it's a furnace that heats everything up and does a separation by a process of melting, either way, that equipment is the reason that the gold is valuable. And so that equipment is valuable, and Jesus comes to make a separation in this world. There's no middle ground. Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. And if Jesus is the knife, his logos is the edge of that knife. His word. It's more than just word. It's more than just logic. It's the whole mindset. His whole understanding of the universe and how it all works together, physically and spiritually. And some people are attracted to that logos, and they get it when they see it at some point, and they go, oh yeah, and they surrender to it, and they change and live by it. They keep it. And if they keep his logos, they're not going to reject you either. They're going to understand what you're saying because it's Jesus who talks through you when you're bearing fruit. They're going to get it. They're going to be drawn to you. But there are other people who don't get it, who don't want anything to do with his way of thinking, his way of understanding. They want their own way of thinking and understanding. And those are the ones who are going to reject you. And so you can know you've been in the game because sometimes you'll score, and you can know you've been in the game because sometimes you'll have mud and blood all over your jersey. But either way, you can know you've been in the game because that is what we're here for, is to represent Jesus in the world so that that division can be made. Because you see, there's no way for someone to truly accept Jesus until they've been confronted by him. And so Jesus goes on to say, look, don't take this personally. It's just the way it is. Jesus doesn't take it personally. He says in verse 21, he says, they'll treat you this way because of my name, my character. For they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin. Now, however, they have no excuse for their sin. He who hates me hates my Father as well. If I had not done among them what no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen these miracles, and yet they have hated both me and my Father. This is to fulfill what is written in their law. They hated me without reason. Now, Jesus goes back and forth between a couple of thoughts in here, but the first one is he doesn't take it personally. He says to us, his followers, look, if they hate you, if they reject you, understand that it's not you that they're hating. It's my name, my character, which they see in you. That's what they're rejecting. My brother was a believer a long time before I was. And he used to come to me and he said, let me tell you about Jesus Christ the Lord. And I used to say, yeah, you know, I don't want to hear about Jesus Christ the Lord. You know, I grew up in Sunday school. I know all about Jesus. And I've got my own way of understanding about Jesus. Now get out of my face. But I wasn't my brother that I was rejecting. It was Jesus. And Jesus says, look, don't take it personally. I don't take it personally, he said. He said, when they reject me, it's because they don't know my Father. And they're rejecting him. You know, people don't want to be bothered with God. That's just simply the way it is with most human beings. With all human beings at some point or other. Don't want to be bothered with God. Right? Much rather make up my own ideas about what's good and bad. Make up my own assumptions about what's true and what's false, what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, this is not a new attitude. Adam and Eve invented it, didn't they? They wanted to eat the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But we've got a new word for it in our day and age called truthiness. And maybe you haven't heard that word, but what it means is living according to what you hope is true. Or what you wish were true. In other words, living by your own wishful thinking. And the idea is that your truth is and your path is perfectly acceptable. And my truth and my path could be in entirely different direction, but they're both equally valid. And we live by tolerance. Because everybody's truth, everybody's path is equally okay. Unless your path, your truth, says there is a truth, and it's embodied in Jesus Christ, and Jesus is the dividing line. Then there's no tolerance for you. See? And in order to be tolerant, they have to be intolerant. In order to live by truthiness, they have to reject the idea of truth. In order to live by their own logic, they've got to reject logic. And that's the way it's always been. And Jesus says, look, if I hadn't come and demonstrated that I really am from God and that there is a God, if I hadn't fulfilled the prophecies in God's word, if I hadn't demonstrated the amazing power of God on this earth and his amazing love, if I hadn't demonstrated, and he's about to demonstrate the love and power of God on the cross and then through the resurrection, if I hadn't done these things, they really wouldn't be guilty of sin. Now, he doesn't mean they wouldn't be guilty of any sin. But they wouldn't be guilty of the sin of deliberately turning their backs on what they could know to be true. As Paul writes in the Romans, suppressing the truth. Not just not knowing it, suppressing it, pushing it down so they don't have to deal with it. I don't want to be bothered with God and I don't want to be bothered by God. And Jesus said, if I hadn't demonstrated that I really am from God, they wouldn't be guilty of deliberately rejecting God. But once again, Jesus is the knife blade. And people either surrender to him or they reject him. And there's no middle ground. If they're confronted by the real Jesus. Now, you're starting to think about this. Let's kind of put this together. We're here to represent the real Jesus. As he lives through us, to make him visible and understandable in this world through his life in us. Okay, and that's the fruit. Okay? The reason for that is so that they can be confronted with the real Jesus and surrender and be filled with him too. Okay? But if they're confronted with the real Jesus, they also might, and more often they might, reject him and turn away deliberately, causing themselves to be guilty of rejecting God's truth. Okay? That's why he came, to make that division. And so when they reject us, we shouldn't be dismayed about it any more than somebody who gets up from a tackle in football looks down and says, oh man, there's a little blood on my uniform. Shouldn't be surprised by that because he knows he's in the game. But we must also remember that none of this makes any difference. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't have any value if what they have rejected in us is not Jesus. I mean, let's admit something here. There's a lot of reasons for Christians to incite hatred in this world. And only one of them is Jesus. I mean, we can be hypocritical. We can be judgmental. We can act holier than thou. We can be aloof and apart from the world and not mess it up, you know, mix it up with the world. We can do nasty things and then say, well, that's all right. I'm forgiven by Jesus. You know, there's all kinds of ways that the world, or the people that don't know Jesus, can hate us, and only one of them is Jesus. And so it's absolutely essential, if we're going to live by this understanding, that we make sure that it's the real Jesus that they see in us and not our twisted distortion of Jesus. Follow me so far? Well, how are we going to do that? Back to the same principle again. He says, verse 26, when the counselor comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who goes out from the Father, he will do the testifying. Thank you very much. He will testify about me. Well, how's the Spirit going to testify? You can't see him. You can't hear him. How's he going to do it? You also must testify. You, in the same way, in cooperation, must testify. For you have been with me from the beginning. So as soon as you have been with Jesus, as soon as he's living with you, Holy Spirit comes in and begins to flow through you. And the more we live by understanding what Jesus is doing and not trying to guess what Jesus would do, but we get in step with the flow of the Spirit manifesting himself through our equipment, the more people will be confronted by the real Jesus. And the more people are confronted by the real Jesus, the more of them will be rescued by faith in the real Jesus. And the more of them will be in a position of rejecting themselves with no reason, because they could have seen it. And in that process, Jesus' followers will get hated. Sorry, that's just the way it is. If you want to be in the game, you better expect to get your uniform dirty. That's just the way it is. Well, this is so important that Jesus lays this out for his apostles just before he gets arrested. And then he says, I told you this. Verse 1 and 16, so that you will not go astray. So you won't be put off by it. So you won't run away from it. They're going to put you out of the synagogue. In fact, the time is coming when anyone who kills you will think he's offering a service to God. They will do such things because they have not known the Father or me. I have told you this so that when this happens to you, when the time comes, you'll remember that I warned you. I did not tell you this at first because I was with you. When Jesus was there in person, he was the lightning rod for the hatred. But once he was ascended to heaven and left them alone on this earth, manifesting the life of Jesus in this world, we become the lightning rods for the hatred. So, when Christians are belittled, when Christians are unfairly restricted in what we're allowed to do, when the media thinks it's fair game to make fun of Christians and to portray us in an unfairly nasty light, Don't be surprised and don't be afraid. But as Peter writes, live such good lives among the pagans, which means letting Jesus flow through you, that they may see Jesus, your good works, and may glorify God, may come and be rescued by the real Jesus. That's the essence of this. That's our assignment. That's the game we're to play. And if you're in the game, yeah, you'll score every once in a while. But most of the time, you're going to come off the field muddied and bloodied.